Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you with you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition, Saturday, March 29th and Sunday, March 30th, 2025. On our front page today, we continue to march towards a local election date. And on our first page this morning, we have the local election 2025 Q&A, and this time featuring the Village of Rossville. Village of Rossville trustees ready for election. Learn more about candidates Samuel McKell and Renee Ward. This comes to us from our Danville Commercial News reporter, Kayla White. On April 1st, several elections will take place across Vermilion County, including those for Alderperson, Mayor of Hoopston, Georgetown, and Westville, school boards, DAC College Board, and Village Trustees. As part of this year's local election coverage, the Commercial News is running a series of question and answer stories, giving each candidate a chance to share their vision for their community so voters can make a more informed decision when they head to the polls. Today, we learn more about two of the candidates running for a trustee position in the Village of Rossville. Samuel, it's either McKell or Michael, and I apologize. I will stick with Michael for reading today, and Renee Ward. The Commercial News was unable to find accurate contact information for candidates Audra Jones, Callan Masterson, Babette Gammon, and David Ault. Jason Hedgecock did not reply by print time. Candidates were limited to three sentences each in their answers. First question, what's the top issue facing the Village of Rossville? Samuel McKell, Michael. I'm not running due to a specific issue. I believe we have a responsibility to our local government to get involved. I've grown up in this area and I want to be in a position to make an impact in my community. Renee Ward. I believe the top issue facing Rossville is our aging infrastructure, our sidewalks, water pipes, and storm sewer systems. Question two. How do you plan to engage with your constituents? Michael. I plan to continue being involved in the community and being approachable to anyone who would want to talk. I've been in this town my whole life. This area means something to me. Ward. When assigned to a committee, I will ensure that we run frequent and transparent meetings that are well advertised to our citizens. I'll be involved directly with the activities of my committee so the community knows who represents them. I promise to remain open to conversation and input so everyone's voice is heard. Question three. Why should you be elected? Michael, I can't tell people how to vote, so they should decide. I ran because I saw an opportunity to jump in and be useful. I plan to be useful if elected. Ward, I believe I should be elected because I'm dedicated to making Rossville an even better place than it is today. As a fifth-generation resident of Rossville with deep family and social ties to this area, my heart belongs to this community and my focus will be always on improving our village. Continuing on the first page, DAC Board honors Tracy Cherry. Cherry retiring after 6 years on the Board of Trustees. Tracy Cherry, longtime District 118 educator and member of Danville Area Community College's Board of Trustees, was sent off with gratitude by the board at their regular meeting Wednesday. Cherry is retiring after more than 6 years of service on the board. I just want to say thank you. What you brought with your background and your experiences, Tracy, has been amazing, and I thank you for the relationships that you've helped nurture and rebuild and grow with District 118, Board Chair Greg Wolf said. I know your heart's there, so you wanted to give opportunities to the students. So I would just say thank you for what you did for students and what you're still doing because you don't know how to retire, Wolf said as members of the audience laughed. Cherry initially retired from her position as principal of Danville High School in 2023 after serving in the school district for 33 years. In July 2024, she stepped in as the interim principal of Schlarman Academy. I applaud you for what you've done and your insight and wish you the very best, Vice Chair Terry Hill said, smiling before claiming he roped Cherry into joining the Board of Trustees. When it came time for Cherry to speak, she spoke of how much she enjoyed watching the college grow. When I came on the board, I wasn't really sure about a lot of things. Just having the opportunity to work with all of the administration and staff and to watch how much the college has grown just in the 6.5 years I've been on is really a credit to all of you who are sitting out there, the administration and the teachers. I know and feel very confident that you'll take this college in the right direction, Cherry said. She also said she looks forward to spending more time with her grandson. It's bittersweet to be moving on, but it hasn't allowed me much time with my grandson, and that's important to do. So I thought this was the best time to shut down and be able to have that, she said, adding that she'll still be living in the area and supporting the college moving forward. As a token of gratitude, Wolf Hill and the other trustees presented Cherry with an ornamented bouquet of yellow flowers, as well as a drawing of DAC's iconic clock tower building. We give it to retiring trustees, this framed image of the clock tower, which is kind of our symbol here in the college, Wolf said, pointing out the engraved tag on the frame with Cherry's name and the years she served, 2018 to 2025. We hope you'll hang it someplace really soon. Wolf also recognized outgoing student trustee Serena Butler, who was not present at the meeting. She's been a tremendous student trustee. I've been on the board 12 years, and I have to put her right up there at the top with just her engaging, her spirit, and her passion, Wolf said. She's really talked to students and brought back good information. She has great questions for us. I mean, she really has a voice, and I'm proud of her. Wolf said he'd try to convince Butler to serve for another term, but she declined. I tell her all the time, "You sure you don't want to do this for 2 years?" And she told me that she told Carrie Thurman that in the nursing program, she just can't. She's maxed out, Wolf said. In the county's municipal elections on April 1st, a new board of trustees will be elected. Current trustees Wolf and Lisa Martin, as well as challengers Laura Williams, Amanda Crabe, and Aaron Biggs are all running for seats on the board. Well, continuing with our look at local elections, we get a two-for-one today. We'll also be looking at the Oakwood trustee candidates, saying building community is a key issue. Again, this is on a reminder, on April 1st, several elections will be taking place across Vermilion County. And as part of this year's local election, the Commercial News is running a series of question and answer stories. Today, in addition to those that we've listened to from Rossville, we're going to learn more about a few of the candidates running for the trustee position in the village of Oakwood. Sandra Hess, Jesse Eaton, Kathy Cannon-Fritz, Farrell Stroh, and Eric Phillips. The Commercial News was unable to find contact information for candidates Robert Parr and Robert Woodward. Candidates are limited again to 3 sentences each in their answers. How will you engage with the constituents if elected? Sandra Hess, I'm retired and walk around the village a lot with my dog, so I already see and talk with residents, and I've had the same landline phone number for 52 years. Jesse Eaton, I'll engage with my constituents as if they were my neighbors. If you see me out and about and have something that needs to be addressed, I'm more than willing to listen. Kathy Cannon-Fritz. As a current trustee, I helped establish a community organization, Oakwood on the Move, through the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs in 2023. This program invites residents to actively participate in the development and improvement of our community, where all voices are heard and decisions are made collaboratively. I will continue to foster open communication and inclusivity, ensuring that all residents have a say in shaping the future of Oakwood. Farrell Stroh, I will be contacted by calling the Village Hall. They will then relay the message to me. Eric Phillips, I'll engage with constituents by being present and accessible in the community, whether attending local sport events, walking my dogs around Oakwood, or participating in village activities. I welcome residents to stop and talk anytime they see me out and about, as I believe open communication is key to effective leadership. Additionally, I encourage people to reach out via email so I can hear their concerns, answer questions, and work together to improve our village. What are the top issues facing the village of Oakwood? Hess, the top issues of Oakwood depend on who you talk with. I think issues should be separated into 2 categories, needs and wants, and prioritize then with what is best for the village residents as a whole being at the top of the list. Eaton, I believe the top issue facing Oakwood today is health and wellness. That being said, I believe the development of an outdoor sports and fitness gym in the city park would serve to better the citizens of Oakwood. Cannon Fritz. The primary role of a trustee is to listen to resident concerns and address them as effectively as possible. Through Oakwood on the Move, we identified 4 key areas of focus, ranked by the community: retail and dining, parks and recreation, festivals and events, and housing. To build on this momentum and better capitalize on the resources within our community, I believe the next step is to create a comprehensive plan to ensure the Village Board is working toward goals identified by residents. Stroh, the top 2 issues facing the Village of Oakwood are finance and responsibility. We need to cut spending. Phillips, the top issue facing the Village of Oakwood is investing in community resources, such as improving our park, enhancing recreational opportunities, and fostering a stronger sense of community. We need to prioritize the betterment of our community. I've always been honest, fair, and transparent, prioritizing the well-being of Oakwood as a whole rather than individual interests. Stroh, I will not say that I'm better than anybody else, but I've served a term and a half and know the position very well. I've accompanied many things for the betterment of the good people of the village of Oakwood. And I apologize that the question turned there in the middle. It's why are you the best option for village trustee? Hess, I've lived in Oakwood over several decades, and people who know me know I stand up for what I think and believe. However, I can change my mind if you have proof that I'm wrong. I've seen this village gain some wealth that over the years has been spent wisely and spent foolishly, and I've seen good boards make good decisions, and I've seen not so good in the decision making. I believe decisions should be made based on how it affects and or benefits the community as a whole. Eaton, my unique age of 38 makes me a great fit for trustee, reaching both younger and older constituent concerns. I want what we all want for our community. What's better? And Phillips, I'm the best option for village trustee because my background in HR and business has given me the skills to make informed decisions based on facts, research, and a careful review of the best long-term options. I believe in smart planning and responsible decision-making to ensure Oakwood remains a great place to live, work, and raise a family. My goal is to help Oakwood continue to grow, strengthening our community for future generations. In our final story on today's front page, BHRA student recognizes district FFA competition. Dateline Bismarck. Bismarck Kenny Rossville Alvin sophomore Camden Carpenter was selected as the district FFA proficiency winner in food service entrepreneurship. Carpenter is a member of the Bismarck Kenny Rossville Alvin FFA chapter of the Illinois Association FFA. Illinois FFA recognizes students in 48 different areas based on their work-based learning, also known as Supervised Agriculture Experiences, or SAE. FFA members who demonstrate outstanding agricultural skills and competencies through record-keeping, leadership, and scholastic achievement may be considered for this award. SAEs allow students to learn by doing, by either owning and operating an agricultural business, working or serving an internship at an agricultural-based business, or conducting an agriculture-based scientific experiment and reporting results. Carpenter was selected as the District 4 winner and Illinois FFA runner-up by a committee of agriculture industry representatives and teachers knowledgeable in this work-based area. She's the daughter of Brian and Aubrey Carpenter from Danville. Mallory Ames is the agricultural teacher and FFA advisor at Bismarck Kenny Rossville Alvin. Carpenter will receive a plaque for her accomplishment. The plaques are made possible by gifts by individuals, businesses, and corporations and organizations through the Illinois Foundation FFA. The Illinois Association FFA is dedicated to making a positive difference in the lives of students by developing their potential for premier leadership, personal growth, and career success through agriculture education. Continuing with page two news, local artists invited to submit art to the Gertz Gallery exhibition. Local artists are invited to submit their artwork to be potentially featured in an upcoming summer exhibition at the Gertz Gallery at Parkland College in collaboration with 40 North Champaign County Arts Council. The Gertz Gallery presents Around the Block 5, Artists from Our Neighborhood, a juried community exhibition of regional artists. The exhibit is open to all artists 18 years and older, residing in Champaign County and counties within District 505, including Ford, Coles, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Iroquois, Livingston, Moultrie, McLean, and Vermilion. All work must be original and not previously exhibited at the Gertz Gallery. Work completed under an instructor's supervision is not eligible. Only works completed after January 2023 will be accepted. Submissions are accepted online only, and the submission deadline is April 21, 2025. Josh Fairbanks will serve as this year's exhibition juror. As assistant director of exhibitions at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, he leads undergraduate and new work exhibitions and manages the SIC galleries. He also teaches practicum courses in exhibition studies. While a student at Parkland College, he worked in the Gertz Gallery. He then studied art history and painting at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. In addition to his administrative responsibilities, Fairbanks is also a practicing artist. We're delighted to host our fifth Around the Block exhibition, gallery director Lisa Costello said. It's always a pleasure to be able to host such a community-oriented event where regional artists can exhibit their work and family, friends, and neighbors can visit the gallery and view the artwork in person. The exhibition includes works by artists from our community and some alumni. It's a survey of artists living in our area, and I was pleased Josh agreed to be our juror. Having been part of our community, he understands the importance of this exhibition, and I look forward to collaborating with him. Working with 40 North, Champaign County's Art Council, they're a valuable resource in our community, and we enjoy partnering with them to make this an even larger and more successful exhibition. The exhibition is scheduled from Monday, June 9th to Wednesday, July 24th. Costello and Kelly White, Executive Director of 40 North, Champaign County Arts Council, will give opening remarks at 6:15 p.m. during a reception on Thursday, June 12th. There will also be a closing reception from 5:30 to 7 on Wednesday, July 24th. For more information, details about the prospectus, and the link to submit an entry, please visit the Geertz Gallery at www.parkland.edu/aroundtheblock5, and the 5 is the Roman numeral V. All events in the Handicapped Accessible Gallery are free and open to the public. Summer gallery hours are Monday through Wednesday from 10 to 5 and Thursday from 10 to 7. To find the gallery, use the M6 parking lot on the north corner of the Parkland College campus. Enter through the door X7, turn left, and follow the ramps uphill to the highest point on the first floor to find the gallery. The gallery windows overlook the outdoor fountain area. Looking at safety in our community, ISP, that's the Illinois State Police, work to combat human trafficking. Danville operation results in 5 arrests and 16 charges filed. The Illinois State Police, ISP, continues to combat trafficking, including human trafficking. ISP Director Brendan Kelly, along with key stakeholders representing human trafficking survivors, law enforcement, and support service providers, appeared before the Senate Criminal Law Committee to speak to Senate Bill 2323. The proposed legislation includes development of a strategic plan to improve the victim-centered, trauma-informed law enforcement response to individuals who've been trafficked, as well as developing training standards for detection, investigation, and response to human trafficking. Human trafficking can come in many forms, from commercial sex acts to forced labor, Kelly said. Because human trafficking has many faces and can happen almost anywhere, it's important to have a comprehensive statewide trauma-informed response that encompasses those who may come in contact with individuals who are being trafficked, such as law enforcement, child services, caseworkers, treatment providers, and others. To combat human trafficking, one of the most underreported and underidentified crimes, the ISP Trafficking Enforcement Bureau, or TEB, conducted 7 human trafficking demand suppression operations in 2024, resulting in 31 arrests and 90 criminal charges. Locally, ISP's work in Danville resulted in 5 arrests and 16 charges. Charges filed during the 7 operations include indecent solicitation of a child, traveling to meet a child, grooming, solicitation to meet a child, unlawful possession of a controlled substance, and armed violence, all felonies. In addition to the demand suppression operations, ISP obtained charges in 3 more cases, including charges of involuntary servitude and promoting prostitution. Since TEB's creation in 2022, more than 1,200 ISP officers have received human trafficking awareness training, and more than 130 officers have been trained in advanced investigative techniques related to human trafficking investigations. In 2024, ISP partnered with the Texas Department of Public Safety to provide interdiction for the protection of children training for frontline officers to recognize signs a child may be a victim at risk of victimization or missing. ISP continues to develop and support victim-centered human trafficking investigations and plans to conduct at least 1 operation each month. ISP works closely with local law enforcement and community organizations to provide essential services to those who've been trafficked, including medical, mental, and substance abuse treatment, as well as food, clothing, short and long-term housing, financial aid, and help obtaining legal assistance. Every year, millions of men, women, and children are victims of trafficking worldwide, including in the United States and in Illinois. The signs of human trafficking can be subtle. To learn more, visit Recognizing the Signs at the National Human Trafficking Hotline. If you suspect human trafficking, contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888 or text 233-733. For more information, visit humantraffickinghotline.org. We often have articles about housing and needs for housing in our local communities. Today, there's maybe a solution, or at least for one happy family, Habitat to have open screening event for home availability. The Habitat for Humanity will have a pre-qualification event for area families that are interested in the organization's home program. The event will take place April 19th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Danville Public Library at 319 North Vermilion Street. Details about who qualifies for a Habitat home can be found at www.habitat.org. The organization currently has both pre-built and plans to build homes available. There are so many variables that come into play, so it's a lot easier and less confusing to refer to website. The pre-qualification event helps the organization to pre-screen families to determine who is eligible to move forward in the process, Director Ryan Campbell said. The April 19th event is the only time an open enrollment period will be offered this year. Those attending should bring cash or a money order for $25 for each individual over the age of 18 that will be living in the home to cover the application process and screening fees. Interested individuals should also bring proof of income and a valid ID to the event. If they are not qualified, of course, we would not charge a fee, Campbell says. And again, to repeat that date, this event for pre-screening for Habitat homes will take place on April 19th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Danville Public Library. We often try to look at a feature article when we look at the Saturday and Sunday paper. So here is a column that's written by Don Richter, Days Gone By column. And today it says, Danville will always be home to Chuckles. It's time to celebrate the iconic candy that was manufactured in Danville for more than 70 years. Chuckles Day in Danville will be August 17th. The celebration will take place at an open house at the Vermilion County Museum. Chuckles were born in Chicago, a sweet jelly-filled candy developed by Fred W. Amond. It was produced there in small quantities for a few years, but Amond's company was looking for a more favorable manufacturing site for the sweet treat. He found it in Vermilion County. In a letter to the Danville Chamber of Commerce dated May 17, 2029, the Amond Company announced, "We have just about definitely decided on Danville as the future site for our factory. The rest is history." With assistance of the Danville Chamber of Commerce and several local banking institutions, Amond was able to build a large modern plant in the city. Chuckles was soon being produced in large quantities. On January 1, 1931, Amond notified the chamber the plant was employing 125 to 200 girls in a clean plant filled with daylight. "Not only do we find Danville an ideal shipping point for our customers throughout the entire United States," he wrote, "but we also receive excellent service from the motor truck forwarders who place our merchandise in Chicago the morning after orders are received." By 1938, Amond reported to the chamber the Danville plant had used 40,941,746 pounds of sugar at a cost of $1,884,000. Chuckles survived the Great Depression of the 1930s and was welcomed by American military personnel fighting all over the world during World War II. Following the war, the name Chuckles was known around the globe. A pack of Chuckles also found its way into school lunchboxes as a rare treat. At the one-room rural school I attended, the five-pack of sweets caused a bit of a problem. How do you divide five pieces of candy? My cousin Bob and I often shared things, and he had the Chuckles. He had no problem with the division. He devoured a favorite, and then there was an even number to share. Primary school math at its best. The Fred W. Amond Company was sold to Domisco in 1970. In the years following, a number of entities owned the plant and continued producing the popular candy on Griffin Street in Danville. The plant closed in 2003 after providing employment for generations of people and adding hundreds of millions of dollars to the local economy. The plant was closed, but Chuckles lived on. Today it's produced by the Ferrara Candy Company. The Progressive Company produces 800 million pounds of various candies annually, and they're sold all over the world. Ferrara's headquarters are in Chicago. The company began when Italian immigrant Salvatore Ferrara opened a bakery in Chicago in 1908. It was in the same city that Fred W. Amond developed his Chuckles candy in the 1920s, two historic candy makers that made lasting contributions to the industry. A special exhibit will be in place for the Chuckles open house in August, and the Vermilion County Museum at 116 North Gilbert Street would welcome information from any person who worked at the Chuckles plant or has special memories of the candy. Chuckles were born in Chicago, but Danville will always be its home. Wow, I remember those when I was a kid. My grandpa loved them. Well, I've let time get away from me a little bit. Normally, I take a break in the middle of our time together to read our death notices, and I blew right past that time. So let's take a look at the obituaries that were received by 5 p.m. on Friday. Danville, has a death notice for Joyce Elaine Keener, age 95, who passed away on March 20th. Her visitation will be from 3 to 6 p.m. on Friday, April the 4th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. There'll be a service at 1 p.m. on Saturday, April 5th at the funeral home, and burial will take place at Sunset Memorial Park. In Rankin, Kathleen Joyce, Kathy Warren, age 77, passed away on Thursday, March 27th. A celebration of her life will be held at a later date. And in Attica, Indiana, Ray Allen Lamar Townsend, Ray, age 19, passed away on March 24th. A memorial gathering will be at the Attica High School Auxiliary Gym on Sunday, April 6th, from 1 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And that concludes the reading of today's obituaries. Well, nothing says spring, well, I guess except for rainy days, much more than baseball. So let's take a look at our local roundup of baseball, because it is officially the baseball season. In local prep roundup, Westville baseball loses its first game. In a rematch of last year's IHSA Class 2A sectional semifinals, the Monticello Sages cruised past the Westville Tigers 18-5 on Friday. Monticello, which ended Westville's season a year ago with a 2-0 triumph, had four innings with four or more runs, including a six-run third inning. Carter Foran, Colton Vance, and Eric Arnold each finished with four hits in the contest for the Sages, while Vance having a home run and four RBIs. Matt Darling and Ben Johnson were each 2-for-3 for the Tigers, who fell to 4-1 on the season, while Easton Bolin had a 3-run homer and a 4-run third inning for Westville. Taking a look at just some of the scores, we're running short of time as always. Mantino 13, Hoopston Area 3. The Cornjerkers took a 1-0 first lead inning, but Mantino would score the next 13 runs to win in 5 innings. BHRA 12, Georgetown, the Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin baseball team got going early and did not stop against Georgetown Ridge Farm on Thursday. There's just a lot of words in there. I apologize. Anyway, the Blue Devils had 15 hits as they beat the Buffaloes 12-0 in 6 innings to break a 2-game losing streak. Monticello 15, Oakwood 0, Armstrong Potomac 9, Villa Grove 4. In other high school baseball news, Hersher 12, BHRA 6, Fountain Central 23, Traders Point 1, that was in Petersburg, Indiana. In prep track, local teams compete in top times. Dateline Bloomington athletes representing local schools competed with the rest of the Illinois top times Class 1A meet. Oakwood's Connor Smith was third in the 400 meter with a time of 50.88 seconds and was eighth in the 200, while teammate Nathan Young was eighth in the high jump and Kyler Johnson was 13th in the shot put. Taking a look at college baseball, Dak splits with Lewis and Clark after a 9-8 loss in the first game. The Jaguars won the second game 6-5 against the Trailblazers. And in prep boys golf, Dax was sixth in the shootout. The Jaguars were able to take 6 out of 16 teams in the Cougar Spring Shootout. So lots going on in spring sports. Looking at the week ahead, on Monday, some upcoming games in prep baseball. Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin will be at Rantoul. All of these games start at 4:30 p.m. Danville will be at Leroy, Hoopston Area at Champaign Central, Tolono Unity at Oakwood Schlarman. Villa Grove will be at Salt Fork on Monday. Danville will be at Bloomington. Hoopston Area will be at Fisher. Leroy will be at Salt Fork. Paris will be at Georgetown Ridge Farm. And Tolono Unity will be at Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin. Oh, and Westville will be at Cisna Park all at 4:30 on Monday. Also, prep softball, prep boys track, Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Covington, Oakwood, St. Anne, and Westville all will be at Hoopston area at 4:30 on Monday. In Prep Girls Track, the same group, Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin, Covington, Oakwood, St. Anne, and Westville will be at Hoopston area at 4:30. Looking at our weather this week, everyone, it looks like we have a cloudy week ahead. Coolest day is going to be Monday with a high of 45 with an AM shower. But the rest of the week, well, it's all over the place, right? It's spring in the Midwest. Tuesday, high of 54, Wednesday, 70, Thursday, 63, Friday, 64. This has been Terry Burdick reading with you from the Commercial News Weekend Edition. I look forward to reading again soon. Bye.